On Point is a production of NPR and WBUR Boston. The program is made possible by your financial support. Please pledge online at WBUR.org.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Jane Clayson, in for Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. The evening news wars. Times have changed, so have the anchors. But a lot has stayed the same. Revenues still add up to hundreds of millions of dollars every year. A white male anchor still dominates the ratings. But there are some differences. CBS has put a woman behind the anchor desk, a very expensive one by the name of Katie Couric. All the networks face tough competition from cable and the internet. The big three are losing viewers, one quite dramatically. Up next, On Point, the future of network news. Stay tuned. Later in the hour, we'll hear from former ABC anchor and host of Nightline, Ted Koppel. But first, joining me from New York is Peter Johnson. He covers media for USA Today. Peter, thanks for being here.
Hi, Jane.
And joining me from Los Angeles is Judy Muller. She was for many years a correspondent at CBS and ABC. She now teaches journalism at the Annenberg School for Communications at the University of Southern California. And she's the author of And Now This, Radio, Television, and the Real World. Judy, nice to have you.
Jane, nice to be with you again.
Before we dive in, I need to say that Judy and I were both correspondents in the same bureau in Los Angeles for ABC News, and I'm also the former anchor of the CBS morning program, The Early Show, and have been interviewed several times by Peter Johnson. So with that out of the way, and with the tables turned, Peter, let me start with you.
Like old times.
Yes. You've been covering media in this country for a very long time. What's the relevance, from your perspective, of the big three network evening newscast today?
Well, it's still pound for pound, you know, anchor for anchor. It's still a place where for 22 or 23 minutes a night, Americans can understand what happened during the day and get an analysis of the events of the day and sometimes hear things first. You know, people are very busy in this country, and not everybody can sit in front of a television or a computer every day and hear what's going on. People have lives, and they need context and perspective. So the evening newscasts provide that every day consistently, you know, throughout the year.
Viewership, can you give us an idea of average number of viewers per night, up or down?
Well, right now it's hovering at around 20 million, maybe a little bit more on, you know, newsier weeks or days. That is down significantly since the heyday in the 80s. It's down something like 27 million viewers. So it's lost about 60% of its viewership. However, when you take the number of viewers who watch the three newscasts each night, it's more than watch pretty much anything else on any other network at all combined. So it's a lot of people.
And given this new sort of landscape at ABC, NBC, and CBS, the seismic shift at the anchor desks happens really once in a generation. How are viewer patterns changing now, would you say?
Well, right now there's a lot of a defection to the internet, and so what's happening is the big three networks are trying to embrace the internet and try to, as you notice if you watch any of these shows, morning or night, they're always saying for more about this you can go to abcnews.com or cbsnews.com, etc. So I think what they're trying to do is head off a disaster by saying, A, you can read more about this on our websites, and B, at some point in time, we expect televisions and computers to all be one, and so stick with us. You younger viewers out there who've never watched an evening broadcast, that's what's going on.
And at some point, will that matter in terms of ratings? Can you foresee some form of rating system of online news?
Yeah, I think what's going to happen pretty soon is the networks are going to figure out a way so that all their viewing can be measured by people like Nielsen. So, you know, if they're getting, you know, several hundred thousand clicks a day on the website and millions of viewers watching, they'll be able to combine those statistics and live on. I would bet the house that that's what they're going to want to do, because otherwise their numbers are going to keep hemorrhaging and advertisers are going to defect. So they're going to want to do something like that, I think.
Judy Muller, what strikes you as you watch the network evening newscast these days?
What strikes me is that there are two things going on. One is that the solid journalism that always attracted people in the past is beginning to win out in terms of what they're seeing as, oh, yes, this works, Charlie Gibson succeeding. Bob Schieffer did very well before he went out and they brought in Katie Couric. And what that says is that there are strong journalistic traditions that people appreciate. And if you look at each one of these broadcasts, they are filled with good reporters. I mean, we always look at the anchors, but I look at every one of those network news shows, and I see such solid reporting. They really do a good job. On the other hand, I think there's a sort of desperate flailing about, hand-wringing that's going on because of this defection to the internet and the loss of viewers to somehow, we've got to get those younger viewers. We've got to somehow get them in the tent. And to do that, I think there's a certain amount of pandering that goes on and a fluffing up, a lightening of the news that undermines the very thing that has worked for them. So I think they're in a bit of a conflict over that.
Katie Couric accused of turning her new evening news broadcast soft, and her ratings, I guess, the worst in the last 20 years. Is that why, Judy?
First of all, the expectations around Katie Couric were so unreasonably high. I think for any one person to carry that burden was unreasonable. And I think the fact that she's a woman and the first woman to anchor a major newscast didn't help, because everybody's looking at the gender issue as well. So I feel a little sorry for her in the sense that she really had to take on so much. And then I think they switched what they wanted her to do. She was brought in and told, bring some of that morning energy, bring some of your interviewing skills. They redid the broadcast to try to make it different than from the other two. And then they said, oh, that's not working. Now we're going to go back to something more traditional. Mm-hmm. They bring in Rick Kaplan, who is a traditional executive producer, mm-hmm. and hardened up the show. Excuse me. And now she's sort of in this, well, what am I to you situation? And I think it's got to be very tough. They've got to decide what kind of news product they want to produce. And then the anchor has to be the editor of that and the face of that.
Peter Johnson, how do you respond to what Judy just said?
I'm afraid I'm going to have to agree with every single syllable Judy said.
Not so bad.
You know, I think Bob Schieffer, one of the good things that Bob did when he came in was he took the emphasis off the anchor position, and he'd introduce his great repertoire company of reporters. He was always talking about how the reporters are the strength of the broadcast, and Charlie Gibson has done the exact same thing over at ABC. Always pointing out that he's just there as sort of the band leader, but they're the real strength of the broadcast. He's pointed that out numerous times, and I think it's one of the reasons that, combined with Charlie's age and experience, that ABC is probably moving ahead now, that they took the emphasis away from the anchor and put it on the reporters, which at that hour of night, that's what viewers want. They want good reporting, good context, and Judy's right. There's some very, very strong reporters at all three of these networks.
Mm-hmm. But do you see the lightening up of the news as well, Peter? I mean, there are some segments that are just unbelievably fluffy.
Yeah, absolutely. However, you know, in their defense, in the producer's defense, you know very well that they can measure these things second by second, and they can see what kinds of features appeal to people and what don't. And I think they're always walking that very dangerous tightrope between boring viewers with very serious, necessary information, while also sort of, I don't like to use the word entertain, but at least appeal to sort of a softer, gentler side.
Peter, you brought up the internet. For so long, the media, especially in television news, network news, it's been a one-way operation. We're going to tell you what the news is. Here is our anchor person, and that person projects the news. Now there's so much interest in trying to connect with viewers and readers and listeners with anchor blogs, creating a sort of circular dialogue. Is that an important part of what you're seeing the news turning into?
It's definitely an important part. Whether it'll turn out historically to be the right move or not, I'm just not sure. I know I've been in this business for 30 years now, and a lot of people my age and older are sort of prejudiced against all this touchy-feely, let's hear what everybody has to say business of the internet, and that at some point you need professionals to tell people this is very important and this is not. And the reason we can tell you this is because we've had years and years and years of business, you know, of experience in the business.
So, Judy, the role of gatekeeper at the Network Evening Newscast is still an important role.
Yes, that's a very important role. But I see it ceding to the power of the Internet, where everybody wants a say. Everybody wants an in on who determines what the news is.
Judy?
I think it's a very important role still, and yet you can only have credibility as a gatekeeper if you're doing your job. And I think in the lead up to the Iraq war, the major media did not do their job, and that eroded trust. And I think what we're seeing now is, oh, so you're the gatekeeper, and you didn't show me through the gate. So there's some backlash to that.
We're talking about the Network Nightly Newscast struggling, but somehow still going strong in the age of the Internet and Gen Y. Charlie Gibson, anchor of the ABC News program World News Tonight, which leads in the ratings, is popular for his avuncular style. Here he is in a broadcast from earlier this month.
The White House and law enforcement agencies are scrambling tonight to prevent a potential terrorism attack in the U.S. Last night, we told you about the director of Homeland Security saying he had a gut feeling there's a greater risk of a terrorist attack in this country this summer. Today, officials said there are growing signs that an attack might be in the works.
We'll talk more about Charlie Gibson's rise in the ratings in the evening newscast wars in just a moment. We've been speaking with Judy Muller, who's had a wonderful career as a correspondent at ABC and CBS, now teaches journalism at the University of Southern California, and with Peter Johnson. He's in New York. He covers media affairs for USA Today. First, though, I'd like to bring in Ted Koppel, former ABC news anchor and host of Nightline. Nice to have you with us, Ted. Thanks for being here.
Thank you very much. Peter ran out of things to say. I should have warned you. He writes for USA Today. He can only do three paragraphs, and then he sort of peters out.
I got to let him respond to that, Peter.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, Ted, you anchored at Nightline, arguably one of the country's most respected news programs. You've been outside the news bubble for a couple of years now. How does it look to you from the outside?
Well, it looks pretty much the same way that it did from the inside. I think what's happening is, you know, we live in exceedingly dangerous times. And the fact of the matter is, it's sort of interesting to me, all kidding aside, listening to what Peter was saying about how, you know, people are very busy and they don't necessarily have the time to get on the Internet during the day. Ironically, 20, 25 years ago, that was Ted Turner's argument for CNN. He said, you know, people are very, very busy, and they don't necessarily have the time to show up at 6:30 in the evening to watch the evening news, so we're going to do something different. We're going to make the news available to you at all times. You know, if you're available at 3 in the morning, that's fine. 2 in the afternoon, that's great. 9 in the morning, we'll be there whenever it is convenient for you. And now we've sort of made a full circle, and we're saying, you know something? No matter what time you tune in on CNN or Fox, you aren't necessarily getting a synthesis of the most important news, and there's still only one place to get that, and that's at 6:30 in the evening on one of those three newscasts you've been discussing.
I wouldn't say that at all, Ted.
What would you say, Judy?
Well, I would say that the Internet is the go-to place for, especially I'm dealing with younger people and younger journalists, but they're clearly, that's where they go. There are plenty of news sites where you can get a synopsis of the latest news and analysis all day long. And they're very good at it. It doesn't take time. They're carrying these devices on their persons. So it's not a big deal to just check out the news during the day.
No, you're absolutely right in terms of it being a generational thing. And you spend even more time with students than I do, but whenever I do, I'm always shocked when I ask the question and say, how many of you get your news from the newspapers? And, you know, sort of three or four hands go up. How many of you get your news from the from television? And maybe one hand goes up. And then you say Internet, and of course most of the hands go up. Nevertheless, and maybe, Jane, you want to get into that a little bit later, I'm not quite as Peter was suggesting before, I'm not quite as impressed by everything that comes over the Internet, and most especially by the fact that I can't necessarily tell what the sources are of the information that comes across on the Internet. Can't argue Judy's point. The younger generation is definitely watching, is definitely getting its news from the Internet. And if you look at those three evening newscasts, it's no accident that you see commercials for people who want to turn their gray hair brown again, mm-hmm. or who suffer from erectile dysfunction or any of the nasty things that happen to you after the age of 50, that audience, large as it may be, is an older audience.
So how do you get your news, Ted? Do you watch an evening newscast?
I do, and the one difference between the way it used to be and the way it is now is I watch it at my convenience. I watch it. My wife and I, you know, we'll sit down to dinner, let's say at 7 or 7:30, and then we'll watch Charlie and maybe the other two newscasts if it's that kind of an evening. And we watch it when it's good for us, or if we're going out to dinner and we've seen friends and we come back at 9 or 10 o'clock. We'll watch the news then. But what we watch is not what's live on CNN or Fox. Mm. What we watch is the evening newscast.
At a time, Ted, when understanding our world seems to be or is more important than ever, networks, as you well know, are closing bureaus around the world. They're parachuting a correspondent in to a news event for a week or two, if at all. What's the long-term implication of that on broadcasts and news coverage itself?
I think the long-term implication of it is that you're not going to have people who are as well grounded in what's going on in Moscow or Beijing or Jerusalem or wherever it may be overseas. You know, I'm one of those who used to be parachuted in when I was an anchor for Nightline. You can never substitute the experience of a man or a woman who has lived and worked in a community, in a country, for 3, 4, or 5 years, and maybe even speaks the language, for even the best journalist who comes jumping in at the last minute and tries to do it all on the basis of quick briefings.
So much of Judy, you have a comment?
Well, yeah, and yet what worries me is that in this interim where this revolution's going on between, you know, how do we keep audience, what are we going to do, and what are the resources, ABC just in the last week essentially closed down its Atlanta bureau, has reduced the number of personnel at the Chicago bureau, has reduced the number of personnel in the LA bureau, and that's cutting back real people who do real on-the-ground reporting and work, and I think that can't help the product.
Peter Johnson, do you think the average viewer notices?
I think pretty soon, at some point, they're going to begin to notice because if you listen to any of these newscasts, a lot of times they're crediting other news organizations with the original reporting. You know, they'll say, as first reported in the New York Times. Now, that's been going on for years, but I see it creeping in more and more, especially in the morning shows. They keep quoting papers like my own and the Washington Post, and that means that they just don't have enough reporters at those places doing enough original reporting. So I see that as a real danger here on in.
Ted Koppel, so much of our news today is of a partisan nature. It comes to you from a point of view. Has that kind of reporting made objective, tell-it-like-it-is journalism less interesting or perhaps even less relevant?
Look, we are talking to one another on National Public Radio. And National Public Radio has, in addition to this fine program, it has Morning Edition, it has All Things Considered, both of which are programs whose audiences have risen astronomically over the last few years. I don't know what the exact numbers are, but I think Morning Edition has something like 12 to 14 million people who listen in the morning, and All Things Considered, slightly fewer, maybe around 10 or 11 million people. Those are huge audiences. You think about that. Those two audiences together are the equivalent of ABC, NBC, and CBS, and you guys have been talking about those audiences as being the biggest out there. They are on television.
Ted Koppel, Judy Muller, and Peter Johnson, I'd like to turn to the phones for a minute. Lots of folks calling, wanting to join the conversation. Deb is calling from Boston, Massachusetts. Deb, hi, you're on the air.
Hi, Jane. Thanks for having me.
Sure.
I just wanted to say that I do not get my news from the three big networks. I get my news, by and large, from NPR and also from the shows on, Channel 2 here, but PBS elsewhere. The Charlie Rose Show, I love that. I feel like I'm getting just, you know, so much, like, quality information. I get really excited by some of the caliber of the guests that he has, and also the Jim Lehrer Show, which used to be called McNeil Lehrer Report. Mm. I don't remember what it's called now. And, you know, I feel like when I do happen to stray into cable territory or even network territory, you know, I always get high. You know, I'm like, what is this? This is entertainment. This is not news. You know, I don't want glitzy. I want information. Now, I don't know where I fall in the continuum of viewers. I'm going to be 35 at the end of the summer. You know, my husband and I make less than $100,000 a year, so I don't know if I am that new, young, sexy viewer that people are after, but, you know, there are people out there like me, and I think that even people younger than I am, you know, feel like they want information.
Point taken to Ted Koppel's point. Thank you, Deb. I'm going to turn to another caller. We have many lined up. Andrew, also from Boston. Andrew, you're on the line. Hello.
Hello. How are you doing today?
Fine. Thank you.
I'm curious why the nightly newses have gone lighter and claim to be more objective than other media that's going on today. I'm part of the younger generation, like Deb. I'm in my 20s, and you know, I'm turning to Stephen Colbert and Jon Stewart and The Onion, which I think is more objective and more biting and more direct to the point.
Mm, interesting point.
I'm curious why nightly news claims to be more objective and has gone more light.
Well, let me turn to Ted Koppel about that. I've actually seen you, Ted, on The Daily Show with Jon Stewart.
And I've even done the Colbert Report.
Well, so what effect do you think programs like that, fake satirical news programs, what effect are they having on viewers and the media as a whole?
Look, I think they're wonderful. I've heard the argument made before that a lot of the young people are watching those programs and feel that they can get all their news from those programs. I love Jon Stewart. I love Stephen Colbert. I think their programs are great, but those programs are no more newscasts than the editorial page cartoons could be used to substitute for the front page of any major newspaper in this country. Ultimately, at some point or another, you've got to have some place that gives you the news. I mean, to talk about Jon Stewart as being more objective, he's funnier. He's sometimes more on the mark because satire has a way of sort of reaching the truth in a way that straight reporting can't. But I don't think John or Stephen would suggest that they are objective. They have a very subjective point of view, and they execute it brilliantly.
Peter Johnson, what do you attribute to the success of programs like that? Just a well-produced, brilliant host?
Yeah, I mean, they're smart guys. They're irreverent, and you know, they're very, very funny. I think what one of the byproducts is that network news executives look at what they're doing and see the young people going to them in droves, and they say, well, we've got to sort of tart up our newscast a bit or make it a little bit more irreverent or do lighter features or something. They're sort of grasping for something to do to stay relevant. And in many respects, I think what Charlie has done at the evening news, at the ABC World News, is just keep the ship going steadily along with a traditional newscast, and that is winning. That proves that you can still do traditional news and make it work.
Ted Jean, could I just say
Judy,
one thing about Jon Stewart?
Sure.
I think that he is doing one thing that we could learn from, and very often he will take something that somebody has said and line it up against all the past statements that person has said, or Rumsfeld or Bush, and show the hypocrisy over time. And that is, I think, a legitimate style for news to do. I mean, to call people on what their past record is. And I don't know that we mainstream media, do that enough. And I think, yes, he's satire, yes, he's comedy, but that's an actual technique that is very, very valid.
We've been looking at the Katie Couric experiment, Ted, at CBS. So many people say she's failing. From your perspective, is there anything that's going right on that program with a woman, first woman to sit in the anchor seat of a major evening newscast?
Well, actually, she's not the first. She's the first to do it solo. Barbara Walters was the first with Harry Reasoner.
Yeah.
May I point out just one thing? I don't know. I forget what her launch date was, but I think Katie's been in that chair now for what? Certainly less than 6 months. Is it about
Labor Day? It was, Ted.
I'm sorry?
Labor Day. Last Labor Day. She started on September.
Oh, in September.
Yeah, she's coming up on her first year.
All right, coming up on the first year. If we had applied the same standard to 60 Minutes back in 1968, that are being applied to Katie Couric right now, that program never would have survived. It didn't become a hit. It didn't become a successful broadcast until two or three years in. I think the first thing we're going to do is let the lady breathe and give her a chance to do something. And as has been noted by Judy before, the fact of the matter is they brought her in to do something totally different. She started doing something totally different. And in a matter of a couple of months, they panicked and decided to go back to the old format.
Having said that, though, Ted, do you think America still wants an older, experienced man delivering the news of the day?
Be careful about how you use the term America. Does my America, the America of the plus 50 set, does that group of America want it? Yes, we're probably more comfortable with people our own age. Do young people watch it? Young people, as Judy has just noted, are barely watching television news at all. So the question is that in-between group. And I don't panic because young people aren't watching the evening news. When I was 19, 20 years old, I wasn't watching it either. But, you know, once I got married, had children, became worried about medical issues and health issues and economic issues and even issues of peace and war, then I started tuning in. I think young people will again.
Ted Koppel, thanks for being here.
Thank you very much.
And Peter Johnson, you actually think the same thing. Young people will grow into an evening newscast. Is that right?
Yes. I mean, eventually everybody gets a mortgage and many people have kids and start worrying about all sorts of things that older people now worry about. And I think the challenge for Katie is during this transition to sort of walk that line between a traditional newscast and bringing some new sensibilities to it. And I agree with Ted. You know, you probably have to give her a fair amount of time to succeed.
New York Times headlined a recent story about Katie Couric. Is it a woman thing or is it Katie Couric? Judy Muller, will you answer that question?
Ooh, that's a tough one. I don't think it's a woman thing. I think we're all ready to have a solo woman anchor on the news. It could be a Katie Couric thing. It may be that she's miscast. And I hate to say only time will tell, but I think Peter's right. Again, unreasonably high expectations for one person, male or female. I just think it's tremendously burdensome for her to carry that weight. And I think the show as a whole has got to attract viewers, and that takes time.
My guests are Judy Muller, former correspondent for many years at ABC News and CBS News, and Peter Johnson, who covers media for USA Today. Wanted to play this clip when she started anchoring the CBS Evening News. Katie Couric came under fire for her informal greeting to viewers at the start of the broadcast.
This is the CBS Evening News with Katie Couric.
Hi, everyone. I'm very happy to be with you tonight.
Peter Johnson, that hi, everyone, got a lot of attention, as you well know. Is Katie Couric suffering from an identity crisis of sorts? Has she been identified and branded a certain way for so many years as a morning show personality? Can she change that perception of herself? And can Americans accept her now as a more serious, hard news anchor person?
I think this is going to be a very tough uphill climb for Katie. Yes, she has been typecast as a very, very good morning show host. And, you know, in that venue, you're doing a mix of very serious interviews with top newsmakers, but then you're going very quickly within the first half an hour into lighter fare, and by the second hour, you're into cooking segments. So the evening news genre is a whole new ball of wax for Katie. And I have not been impressed with what she's been doing. And I think she's brought in this new executive producer who I've known for years, Rick Kaplan. And as Judy said, he's a very good hard news producer. But I think it remains to be seen whether Katie can turn it around and whether she has the commitment that you need as a hard news anchor to actually, go on these hard stories, at the drop of a hat. She's a single mom, and she's got two daughters at home, and I haven't seen any evidence that she's willing to do this.
Judy, does it all fall on Katie? I mean, there must be something said here for, sure, she makes $15 million a year. She's got a new $3 million set. But, you know, budgets are budgets. And in a news division at CBS that's been whittled down financially over the years, you know, a news budget that's been cut in half over the last 10 years, you can't put a high-priced talent in front of a news desk and with a news division that's bare bones.
Bare bones and possibly suffering from low morale because of it. You walk into a culture at CBS that has always prided itself on being what they call the Tiffany of networks, very proud news tradition, starting with Walter Cronkite. By the way, wasn't that Walter Cronkite introducing her on her first? Sounded like it.
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
Which is a mixed bag. At any rate, it seems to me that the culture of CBS in its current form probably didn't help her, because you walk into this, you know, people I don't think were cheering. And I don't know that, and I should say as a disclaimer, my daughter is a producer for that broadcast, so just, and she's, this is not where my information comes from, but I do think that I've worked at CBS myself, and that it can be a difficult place to walk in from outside. It's a very strong insider culture, and I don't think that helps.
The idea of a celebrity anchor, Peter Johnson, who was particularly grating to many of the old school news hounds at CBS who show up for stories in a trench coat and a reporter's notebook, and this is a very different era they're in now.
Yeah, but I'm not so sure. I agree with Judy on that. I think she got a very warm welcome from the old guard at CBS. I think the way she handled herself and comported herself in the first couple of weeks is what got her into trouble. You know, with the hi everyone and the informality, and she brought along a handful of her handpicked producers, who I understand didn't really get along with people, ruffled some feathers. But I think she got there was definitely a welcome mat put out for Katie from all the old people at CBS, and I think Katie herself got herself into trouble.
Let's go to the calls. Callers. Rick is on the line from Buckridge, Georgia. Rick, hi. You're on the air.
Hello there.
Hello.
I'm 60 years old, and I can remember back as far as the mid-80s and as recent as last year, channel surfing between ABC, CBS, and NBC during the news broadcast, and finding that perhaps out of five stories, all three networks were showing the exact same stories. Maybe the last two might have been flip-flopped. But because of this, I felt like my news was being choreographed, and therefore I lost faith and interest in the news on television and chose to go to the Internet, where I could get more news at my disposal and then choose things that I thought were more pertinent.
Good question, Rick. Thank you. Peter Johnson, I'll turn it to you. Is it starting to all look the same, a bit homogeneous?
Oh, I think it's been that way for many, many years, yes. I do think there's a pack group mentality to the three networks, and I think they do look surprisingly alike. I mean, there's a guy in New York here, who Andrew Tindall, who does nothing but follow the newscasts, and he charts it each week, and you can see that the war in Iraq will usually get top billing and then followed by the economy or the political race or something like that. So he's absolutely right, and that's one of the reasons that the Internet is so popular. It gives people choice.
Kimberly is on the line now from Long Meadow, Massachusetts. Kimberly, you're on the line. Go ahead.
Hello. I'm calling because, first of all, I would like to say that I'm fundamentally in agreement with a lot of what Ted Koppel had to say about the daily synthesis. But the generational concern and a question of access also concerns me. As someone who does not or cannot afford things like iPods and all these handheld devices, and a lot of our elderly who either are phobic of them or cannot afford them because they're on a fixed income, it seems as though we're going to be cut out of access to that proper synthesization of news. And what happens to us as time goes by if we rely solely on going to the Internet whenever you want it or having a podcast?
Kimberly, thank you. Is this an issue of have and have-nots, Judy, when it comes to news access?
I think this is a great question.
Yeah.
I think until this all settles out. This is going to be the central issue, is the wired versus the wireless, the older versus the younger, and the poor versus the rich. You've got some real divisions here, and I think it's going to be a problem. But eventually, I believe everybody will be on board. Certainly if I can, you know, operate some of these devices, and I'm the biggest Luddite walking, you know, eventually everybody will come on board or not. But still, I think that that's where it's going. And the more you, more access you want, the more connection you want to the community you live in, that's where you'll go. And people will find it easy. For instance, if you want to find out more about your local community, you'll go to a website that will replace perhaps your local paper or be an adjunct of your local paper. And you'll find that that's a place where you can communicate with people, even if you're old and shut in. Actually, it could be quite a boon.
But certainly the young people and your students at USC are that's their future.
Yes, and even this week I run a graduate program at USC called News 21 in conjunction with four other major journalism schools around the country. It's funded by Carnegie Knight, and the whole idea is to do substantive journalism in innovative ways. And we have a website, newsinitiative.org, just in case you want to check it out. And we're learning that there's a whole new way of storytelling. It's still substantive. It's still good journalism. But online journalism is not just putting text online. It's not just putting your video online. It's a whole new way of reporting, and I think it's very exciting. It's actually got me excited about the future of journalism.
Peter, what do you think about that? Is sort of the average citizen as journalist coming up in the future?
Yeah, I mean, as a company, the parent company of USA Today, Gannett is embracing it. I think it's a very important aspect of journalism. The more eyes, the more ears out there. It's definitely the future. I think you should always need to have people who are trained, you know, in the gathering of news, mm-hmm. and how to, you know, figure out what's truth and what's opinion and separate it all and make sense of it. So I think that, you know, yes, we're going to see more and more regular people reporting the news, and I think that's good. I think it's great.
Ted is calling from Norfolk, Virginia. Ted, you're on the line. Hello.
Hi, how are you?
Fine, thank you
very much for taking my call,
sure.
And that was a perfect straight into the comments that I needed to make in order to elicit some reaction from your guests.
Mm-hmm.
Given the ubiquity of technology, almost anyone today with a cell phone, a digital camera, an iPhone, and the Internet can be part of, quote-unquote, the media. And that alternative news-type sources in many ways are viewed as more credible than traditional media. We hearken back to the subway bombings in London. There were images and footage coming out of there in near real time, and since people were looking at it, they were saying, oh, well, this is what's truth. This is ground truth. It's not being filtered, so I believe it more. And in this kind of an environment, these atmospherics, the traditional media, has in many ways, in order to compete, runs the risk of abrogating its responsibility for authenticity and verification in favor of being first and fast, even if flawed. And this has some significant impact on our leaders and our decision makers. And a very brief case in point, if we remember back when Arafat was ill in Paris, you know, the initial report of his death was incorrect. And the President of the United States was in a press conference, and a reporter got a text message, Arafat has died. The reporter asked the President, Mr. President, I just got word that Yasser Arafat has died. Do you have a comment? And again, the death was incorrect. And the President says, you know, pause a moment, kind of taken aback. He wasn't prepared for that question. And his response was, Yasser Arafat is a great man. I will pray for his soul. In that moment, U.S. government policy took a shift. Unintended consequences, because by providing accolades to Yasser Arafat, we just validated a lot of the actions and activities of the PLO. So given these atmospherics in this environment, I would welcome any comments from your guests, and I will take those comments
Ted,
offline.
Thank you very much. Judy, when does it start?
I'm sorry Ted isn't still with us, because that evening Nightline did a show called What If Yasser Arafat Is Dead, and I kidded him. I said, you could do a whole series. What if so-and-so is dead? You could just keep going with it. What would happen? But at any rate, that was embarrassing, and I think every time one of those instances happens, and the callers, this is a really good question, the race to be first and the need to verify is always going to be a conflict.
Yes.
And I think we've been caught off guard with this enough times that every time we learn this lesson, we go back and we say, I'm thinking of the Atlanta Olympics bomber, mm-hmm. When they falsely charged this guy. And, you know, everybody was saying, well, what if he did it? And they're all around his house and basically saying he was probably guilty. And we Richard Jewell. And that name ought to ring in our heads every time we want to do that. And yet we forget. And so it happens over and over again, this lesson, and it's going to happen more often because of people feeding in these reports that can't be verified at the moment. But the BBC just learned this lesson in a hard way. Some viewer sent in a doctored situation where the video appeared to show Queen Elizabeth storming out of a photo session, which was not true. And they had to retract it and apologize, and now they're going to look at that citizen-contributed video a lot more closely.
Mm. Peter, thoughts?
Oh, there are lots of thoughts. I mean, I spend several hours a week chasing something that an editor has read online and said, check this out. And I check it out, and 90% of the time it's wrong. 10% of the time it's right. Mm. And I think it's a real danger playing who's on first and trying to, you know, play the speed game, because right now everything's at the speed of light, and it's a crazy world out there. And I think everybody needs to take a collective breath and say, you know, can it wait an hour? I think so. But let's do some reporting. Let's all calm down a bit.
Richard is on the line from Williamsburg, Virginia. Richard, hello.
Hello. I wanted to defend Katie Couric. If at least at CBS, the folks running the network have a problem with Couric, it isn't Couric that needs to come around to CBS. It's CBS that needs to come around to Couric. It's not like CBS is gaining market share in leaps and bounds. They're losing it, and they need to do something to change things up. The idea that she can't do hard news because she's a single mom with two kids at home, she's making $15 million a year. I don't think the kids are sitting at home waiting for her to come home with no one to watch them. So the idea that a single mom or a woman can't do hard news in some way, shape, or form because of her duties as a mother, it has to rank as one of the sillier comments I've heard in weeks.
Peter Johnson,
can I defend that silly comment? The evidence shows that Katie has not gone out on hard news stories since she's joined the CBS Evening News. She's not been to Iraq in an entire year. I would argue that concern over her daughters and concern over being a single parent might contribute to not going to some very dangerous situations in the world. So I think it's a perfectly appropriate comment to make, because the evidence shows it.
And I would also tell you that there are many male parents of children who are correspondents who have turned down the option of going to Iraq for the very same reason.
Right. But as an anchor, I think viewers often expect anchors to go in harm's way. And I think that's an issue in this race between Katie, Brian Williams, and Charlie Gibson. Brian Williams spent a lot of time down in New Orleans, walking around in the mud down there. Mm-hmm. So I think it is an issue.
Yet I think also you could argue that putting an anchor in harm's way just for the photo op is really gratuitous and dangerous. And look what happened to Bob Woodruff. I mean, he wanted to be there, and he wanted to be reporting, but he had his head stuck out of a turret doing it on camera. And and to me, I thought, oh, my gosh, maybe they'll all come to their senses now.
In our last minute, let me ask you both to respond to this question, the future of network news as we move forward. A decline in viewership, an increase? Is Katie Couric going to last? Peter Johnson, the start?
I think it's going to level off for now, and I think that they're going to probably get some more eyeballs from the web, and I think they're going to continue to figure out how to transition from network TV into the Internet.
Judy Muller, last word.
What's the question again?
The future of the network newscasts. Increase in viewership, a decline? You think Charlie Gibson is going to maintain his lead now that he's overtaken the others?
I think it's going to morph. I think they're all very smart in putting a lot of resources into the Internet now, because the money will follow the eyeballs, and the eyeballs are going somewhere else.
Judy Muller, a correspondent formerly of CBS and ABC, now teaches journalism at the Annenberg School for Communications at the University of Southern California. Judy, thanks so much.
You bet.
Peter Johnson in New York City. He's covered media for a long time for USA Today. Appreciate your time too, Peter. Thanks.
My pleasure.
I'm Jane Clayson in for Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.